Can you hear me now? Go ahead. Switch. How do I switch the monitors?
Just goes up and down, okay?
Oh, okay.
So you're on one and two.
It's
got three inputs.
Oh, it's got three inputs. Okay. Well, that'll be fun.
Okay,
thanks. All right. Good morning, everybody. Still morning, right? Not sure what time zone I'm in anymore. We're here to talk about Project Crescent. I'm Carolyn Chow. I'm a lead program manager with the reporting services team, all the way over from Redmond. I own all of the reporting tools for reporting services, so Report Builder, Bids, and now Project Crescent. I've been with the team for about 7 years, and I've been with Microsoft for about 13 years, so I've been around for a long time. All around BI. Love BI. The screen is showing me something funny. Okay. All right, so what are we going to do today? We're here to learn about Project Crescent, and the first thing I want to tell you is to keep in mind that Project Crescent is not created for you, right? You guys are mostly developers and IT folks, and that's really not the target of what we're trying to create Project Crescent for. You guys are here to kind of learn about it, to figure out how it fits in your organization, but the functionality itself is targeted at end users, right? We want users to be able to self-service themselves, to be able to answer the questions they need to do their daily work, okay? So we'll learn about the key capabilities of Crescent. We'll talk about some of the architecture and requirements. This part that will help you understand what it will take to get Project Crescent running up in your environment. And we'll talk about how it fits in with the rest of the Microsoft BI stack, and hopefully we'll have some fun with data, okay? So a little reminder about Microsoft Business Intelligence. I see lots of familiar faces from yesterday's BI Unplug session, so I know you are mostly familiar with Microsoft BI, but just in case. Of course, we have all of our source systems. You have Oracle, you have SQL Server, SAP, Dynamics, any of the line of data applications, and any data feeds that you have. Those all feed up into what we consider to be the data platform for Microsoft BI, and that would, of course, be SQL Server. SQL Server includes analysis services, reporting services, integration services, master data services. It's not just a relational engine, right? That's all the same box, and it comprises the data platform for the Microsoft BI stack. And on top of that, of course, we have all of our productivity tools. SharePoint for collaboration and for dashboarding and scorecards. We have Excel, the number one productivity tool in the world. And now Power Pivot, and I'll show you Power Pivot also. And that, of course, is the front end to the Microsoft BI stack, Microsoft SharePoint, and Office together. And that kind of tells you everything that is in the Microsoft BI stack. It's not just one product. It is a suite of products and a line of products that all together work to form the Microsoft BI solution. Okay. All right, so a little bit of overview, two slides, just to give you some context for Denali overall from a SQL Server point of view and also from a reporting services point of view. There are three pillars to Microsoft SQL Server Denali, which is the next version of SQL Server. CTP3 is now available, so if you want to go ahead and give that a try, that's out there. But the first one is Mission Critical Platform. Rob was here just a session before me. That's kind of his area of expertise. Flexibility with high availability, always on, is another key feature of SQL Server Denali. And data warehousing with parallel data warehouse with a lot of the columnar indexes, Apollo, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. Lots of capabilities that are being offered as part of the Mission Critical pillar for Denali. And, of course, also in the middle we have developer and IT productivity. These are all of our tools that are coming with Denali. We've worked hard to, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, move to Dev 10 so that your tool set is now the same as for your normal other development. And, of course, you know, some of the pillars here are making sure that we keep our lowest cost to TCO, lots of great time to market with all the different types of controls that we build for both BI and for the developer platform in general. And then a lot of different ways and not a lot of different tools for building some of the new types of applications. And some of those are in CTP3, some of them are still yet to come, but certainly developers and IT productivity is a big deal. And then finally, the BI pillar itself is actually called Pervasive Insight, and this is really about expanding the reach of BI to all of our business users. This is the Microsoft BI vision that we've had for the last 15 years. It hasn't changed. BI for the masses is still where we want to head and where we are heading. With Power Pivot in SQL Server 2008 R2, we think we made a huge stride in that direction, bringing the ability to mash up data to end users. And now with Crescent and all the other offerings that are coming with Denali, we're really going to move the needle in terms of bringing BI to the masses. We, as I said, with SQL Server 2008 R2, we did have the introduction of the VertiPack engine, which is what sits behind the Power Pivot add-in. That's an in-memory column store engine, the same engine that's actually used in that Apollo feature that I talked about in the SQL Server relational engine. So that capability is bringing a lot of the flexibility and the kind of scale that we can deliver in the Denali timeframe. And, of course, making the data consistent and credible to users, very important to us. So those are the three pillars. And, again, BI really sits on the right hand. So I have a whole talk on this tomorrow, but these are the pillars for reporting services for the upcoming release. There are three major areas that we are investing in as a team. The first one is, I'm going to go from the right to the left. First one is around SharePoint and the SharePoint embedded mode for reporting services. We've done a whole bunch of work there to make reporting services a service, a native service of SharePoint for this release. And if you're interested in finding out about that, come to my session tomorrow. I'm not going to cover it here. But there's a ton of new capability that really just makes it easier for you to install, configure, and manage your reporting services service as part of SharePoint. The middle pillar is increasing productivity, and this is the big thing we're doing there is adding the alerting capability. If you're used to be familiar with notification services, this is not the same capability. This is an alerting capability that's targeted end users for defining simple business rules like send me an email when sales go below 100,000 or send me an email when this KPI reaches 50%. Rules like that, they're very simple for an end user to create. They manage their own alerts within SharePoint, and they receive emails when those, whatever rules it is that they create, get triggered. And those are all off of data in reports. So if you have reports today, this is just an added new functionality on top of your existing reports. And there's also work that we've done with the new formats. It's kind of something that a lot of people have been waiting for a long time, but we used to export only to the Microsoft Office 2007 formats, and with Denali we'll have 2003 format. And with the Denali release, we now have the 2007-2008 XLSX and DocX formats. And also, we've upgraded BIDS, like I said, to use Dev10. So now all of BIDS is available within Dev10, and you'll be able to have one shell for both your normal projects and your business intelligence projects. And finally, we have Project Crescent, which is the focus of our talk today. Crescent is all about creating highly visual experiences for users to explore and navigate their data and making that easy to share at all times. Okay, so let's focus on that. So Project Crescent, obviously a code name, is an interactive data exploration and visual presentation experience. So the important, there are not very many words in there, and they're kind of all important, but interactivity is a huge part of what makes Crescent interesting to users, right? We want them to be able to see the data and interact with it live, to explore it to find interesting insights, and also be able to share it and present it at all times. How many of you have seen a demo of Crescent before? A couple of you. Okay, not that many. Okay, cool. All right, so I'm going to show you the standard demo first, and some of you might have seen this one, and then we'll move on and I'll show you some new stuff. Everything I'm going to show you today is available with CTP3, so you can go ahead and just go and get CTP3 and try it out yourselves. Okay, there we go. All right. So, let's do that again. The resolution is not so good, so let's zoom out. All right, so Project Crescent is a web-based application. Actually, let me go ahead and go back for a sec. I'm going to show you where it comes from. So I'm in SharePoint, and Project Crescent is launched from SharePoint. It's part of our SharePoint integrated mode offering. You can see I've got a shared documents library. It can be any library. If you have a Power Pivot gallery, it'll also be launched from there. I'm not sure that I have any right now. Let's go and find out. If not, we'll just go back. So a Power Pivot gallery is just another view on top of a SharePoint document library. And I may or may not have anything here. Let's see. Looks like maybe. Yep. Okay, so if I have a set of Power Pivot workbooks, I can publish those directly to SharePoint. And you can see there is a Launch Crescent icon here. And that will also launch Crescent. But if you're in a regular shared documents library, you can just go ahead and launch Crescent either from a shared data source, which is a reporting services data source. That's what I have here. Or you can launch it from a BIM file, which is an analysis services data source that also allows you to connect to BISM models. So here, when I click the down arrow for this data source, I can create a Crescent report, and that'll go ahead and launch Crescent. Crescent is a Silverlight application with CTP 3. It requires Silverlight 4, but when we actually release, it will require Silverlight 5. There are a ton of fixes and some new features that they've added specifically for us, and some performance improvements and stuff like that. We've been working very, very closely with the Silverlight team. It's basically a real joint venture between us and them in terms of having a great interactive platform for us to build off of. And so we will require Silverlight 5 by the time we ship. Okay? So it's all web-enabled. Everything you see is built after the Microsoft Office paradigm. It feels like a rich application, but it is all thin and Silverlight-based and on the web. Okay? So in order to add anything to my report, I can just come in here and say I'm going to create a movie sales report. And this is my model, which is the BI semantic model. And you can tell my model has information about movies in this case. I'm going to go ahead and select and click on movies. And what that's going to do is it's going to go and find me the most interesting fields about movies. And go ahead and add them to my report. And you can see that that's defined in the model. The fields that got clicked and automatically put on the screen, those are defined in the model. And when, as a user, I don't have to think about it. I can just easily explore my data. And you can see I've got movies. I've got the title of the movie, the poster, the director, the provider, and so forth. And I can scroll down and see that I have a whole ton of movies here, right? And let's scroll back up. One of the key tenets of Project Crescent is the ability to transform data in a single click. So we want to make it really easy for the user to focus on their analysis and focus on their data itself and not have to think about, you know, I really want this kind of a chart, so I got to go and drag this chart onto the screen and do that. So what we do is we start everything off as a little table, which is what you're looking at here, and then you can transform that table into any other view that you want. In this case, I'm going to click on the card view. And what that did was just give me the exact same data, but in kind of this little card-looking format. It's the exact same data, and in a single click, I was able to transform the look of that data into something completely different. Okay? So let's go ahead and add some more things to my report. And I'll go ahead and add, for example, let's grab rating. And I'll come here and grab sales. And let's take a look at the number of downloads. And again, everything lands as a little table on the page. And then I can kind of visually verify that my totals are within the right range and about the right size. And then I have all the different types of visualizations that I can transform to. So, for example, I'm going to go ahead and change that into a column chart. And did I click it? It's thinking about it. There it goes. So there's my column chart. And let me go ahead and grab genre. And I'll grab the revenue. And I'll change that into a bar chart. Okay. So you can see really easily within about 6 clicks, I was able to get a really nice looking simple report up and running, right? I didn't have to write anything to do that. And one of the great things about Crescent is not only can you create visualizations really easily, but you get interactivity for free, right? So we understand the model. We understand exactly everything that we've laid out on the page. We generated all the queries, so we know exactly the kind of queries that we created. And that allows us to give you interactivity for free. So, for example, if I come in here and I click on Rated R, that's going to limit the list of movies to just the Rated R movies and show me the contribution of the Rated R movies to my sales down here, okay? And as a user, I don't have to do anything to configure that kind of interactivity. It just comes out of the box, right? So I can come back here and, you know, click on this one and say, I want to see the contribution of the comedy movies. And it'll go ahead and do that. All right. So that's interactivity. This is one example of interactivity. Another type of interactivity we have is, let's say I want to look at some more details about genres. And I'll go ahead and change that into a scatter plot. And for a scatter plot, of course, you know, I need some more measures. So I'm going to compare the downloads and the revenues, and those will be my two axes. And then I'm going to show the size of the bubbles to be the number of titles. And what that's going to tell me is, if I come here and hover over this guy, comedy is our biggest seller, right? Highest in revenue and downloads. And also a lot of different titles for that. Science fiction here is a much smaller bubble. It means we don't have very many science fiction titles, but the sales and downloads of revenue and downloads of science fiction are also really, really high, right? So what if I want to look at that information over time? I can come here and grab month. And what that's going to do is the application figures out that month is a type of time, and it'll plot that right into what we call the play axis. And it'll just generate that in just a sec. A little slow today. Okay, so what I can do then, of course, is that play this data over time. I can hit play, and it'll start it, and it'll show me the trends of this data as it's growing over time. Okay, if I don't have enough room, I can go ahead and pop that out. And I can see that comedy and science fiction, you know, they kind of grow and get big over time. But if I come back here and play it again, you'll see that the trends are actually very different. Comedy comes out very steadily. It has a very steady growth. It's, you know, very even in its growth. But right at the end, that science fiction bubble starts growing really, really fast, and it catches up. So another type of interactivity that we can do is I can click on the bubble and see the trail of that over time, right? And I can also click on this bubble and see that trail. And you can tell based on the time information that the shape of the data is very different, right? The spacing between the bubbles is actually really, really important in this case. That tells you that there's a different trend in the growth of the data. That's really important to be able to know. So if I come in here and click science fiction, let's do that. Oops, I unclicked it. And pop it back in, you'll see that I didn't lose context of that interactivity while I was playing here. When I pop back in, you'll see that most of our science fiction movies are rated PG-13, and Avatar jumps right to the top, because the data that we have is actually from the Xbox Live service, and right when we grabbed the snapshot of the data is when Avatar was being released, and so the growth of that viewing was very, very high. And that jumps right to the top. Okay. Another thing that we do is that I talked about presentation ready, and with presentation ready, you can see that Project Crescent is designed for interactivity and to present on a screen. So we have this Silverlight full screen mode, which, you know, if you've used Silverlight, you're probably kind of familiar with it. But that gives you the ability to pop it out in full screen. Okay. Usually does. I'll show you that on the other machine if it doesn't work here. All right, so it doesn't want to do that at the moment. I'm not sure why. Okay. Oh, there we go. I was just thinking about it. So in full screen mode, you can see that, you know, there's not, when you're presenting on a screen, it's like designing a PowerPoint slide, right? There's limited room that you can use. So one of the key things that we want to do is to enable you to have different visualizations that help you navigate a lot of data at once. So an example of that is what we call a tile visualization. So I can go ahead and transform this into a tile. And what that does is it's going to give me a way to navigate all the movies. And within that, I get a little container where I can get details about that specific movie. So, for example, if I come in here and say I'd like to see the sales of movies by region, I can grab the region name, and I'll grab the revenue and the downloads again. So on the right-hand side, what I've got is a set of visualizations that go across all the movies. But on the left-hand side, I'm going to navigate each individual movie separately, right? So I've got, for example, here I've got 102 Dalmatians. I can come across and look at 28 Days. And those are going to be details specific to that movie, whereas everything on the right-hand side is going to be about all the different movies in my database. So that's really important because that's hard to do, right? It's hard for users to kind of understand both the concept of a master detail report, which is kind of what we've created here, and also combine that with some summary type of information. And that's really easy to do in Crescent because that's just kind of a natural, it's very natural to think that way for a user, but very hard to do conceptually and technically. And we try to make that really easy. Okay? So let's go ahead and head back to the slides for a sec. So that gives you a little bit of an overview of Crescent and some of its capabilities. And did it come back? One more. There we go. All right. So the three tenets around Crescent that I've talked a little bit about already, very highly visual design experience, very rich metadata-driven interactivity that all comes from having the BI semantic model underneath all of the visualizations that we've talked about. It's fully integrated with PowerPivot and the VertiPack engine. It requires, in fact, the BI semantic model. It cannot work without it, right? That's the magic that glues everything together behind the scenes. And it's presentation ready at all times. So you have full screen mode. You can go and walk into a meeting and present the data, kind of walk someone through your thinking. When we started working on Crescent, it was kind of interesting, you know, where we started. If you look at our other tools, Business Intelligence Development Studio with BIDS and Report Designer and also Report Builder, a lot of where we were headed with those tools was around adding a lot of functionality and a lot of ability to control that functionality, right? If you're familiar with reporting services, one of the most positive and most negative things about reporting services is that it was built as a platform from the ground up, which means there's a workaround for almost everything. You can write code for almost everything, right? So that mentality is very steeped into our team, and we had to move away from that in a lot of ways in order to get to Crescent, right? Crescent is about simplification. It's not about having a lot of knobs to turn and having a lot of different properties. If you've ever been in BIDS and you've seen the property grid for BIDS, there's a whole ton of things you can do, right? You can take a chart control in reporting services and make it look like not a chart control at all, right? By writing a little code, by adding a little custom expression here and there. There's a whole ton of stuff you can do like that. That's not the goal of Crescent, right? The goal of Crescent is to be great out of the box, to have really good out-of-the-box interactivity, to do the things that users expect without having them to think about it. So what we did was we spent a lot of time talking about this poster and what we were going to put on it. And we remind ourselves and our developers of the tenets that we use to design Crescent all the time. So things like one way to do things. You know, there's not 10 ways and 10 different widgets you can control. It's one way to do things. Everything needs to be visual to the user and have a response. So no more than two clicks for them to get where they want to next. All tasks are done in context, which means they always see the data. There's never the separation of design mode versus preview mode. You got to run your report and wait for it for a while. Everything is done in context with the data. Everything happens on the canvas, and less is more, right? All that stuff that I talked about, having that automatic capability, the interactivity, the drill, the click and contribution stuff, all that happens out of the box without the user having to do it. That means it's really hard, it's really easy for the user, but there's a ton of code behind that, right? We have to manage all of our queries. We have to know exactly what's on the page. We have to, you know, have to do a whole bunch of work to make it really easy for the user. But it's really important for this kind of experience and this user set to not have them thinking about all the different knobs. And, of course, with the VertiPack engine, we get a lot of the performance and efficiency that we talked about. So this poster sits outside my window, and right now we have we change it every season to keep it fresh and to keep people reminded of it. I brought the old version because winter here. Right where we are, it's summertime. So there's a different version on my wall. Okay, so that tells you kind of where we're going with it. So what does the architecture look like? I said a little bit that Crescent requires both the BISM model, and that means AS is in the picture. That's on the right-hand side. And it's also only available with reporting services in SharePoint mode. So I'm sitting out here, and I have the Crescent client, which is just IE with Silverlight 4 currently, and Silverlight 5, like I mentioned before. And if I'm an end user, I can come in with a PowerPivot model created in Excel. I can publish that model to SharePoint, and I can point Crescent at it. And what that does is basically publishes that to the SharePoint farm, and the PowerPivot system service here understands it and talks to analysis services also in SharePoint integrated mode. If you don't want to do that and you're an IT person, you want to develop a model that's enterprise scale, that you want to do row-level security with, there are a number of features that are available only through the analysis services server capabilities where you deploy your model not to SharePoint through Excel but directly to an analysis services database. It's kind of like creating a cube, right? And that lives on the server. So there are two ways to generate a BISM, either through Excel directly or with BIDS, and you publish that to an analysis services server. Okay? And in either case, Crescent can talk to it. If you have the Excel version, of course, you point Crescent directly at the Excel version that runs in SharePoint with the engine that's in SharePoint mode. If it's on the analysis services server, we pass the queries to analysis services. Analysis services goes and runs the queries on the server and sends us back the results. There's also a new mode with CDB3 that's not captured all too well here, but there is direct query. So direct query allows you to have pass through to a SQL Server relational database directly. So you don't have to cache data in analysis services. You can actually pass the queries directly to SQL relational. If you want to do that, there are possibly performance hits for doing that, right? We don't know how fast your underlying SQL Server database is, how big it is. So there may be some performance implications of that. To help that along is for you to build the new Apollo indexes, which are also vertical column store indexes, same technology, so that you can make your relational sources really, really fast, and that will help your Crescent experience if you want to do direct query and do pass-through. Okay? So that's an overview of the architecture. There were lots of questions yesterday about the BI semantic model, so I threw in a couple of slides. Let's talk about those for a few minutes. Like I said, the new positioning is that there is one BI semantic model. It happens to have two different modes, right? But the benefits of having a BI semantic model, and hopefully most of you are familiar with this already, is it gives you flexibility because it does have two different modes. It has the ability to allow you to pick which mode works best for your organization. You can use it in cached or pass-through storage. For VertiPack, you're caching everything in memory. You can also use MOLAP or to scale if you want to, which is the multidimensional traditional OLAP capabilities. And you have your choice of BI end-user tools, right? You have Crescent. You can connect to a BISM model using BIDS, using Report Builder, using Excel, and you can use those tools against the traditional analysis services models also, right? Or analysis services in multidimensional mode. There's a lot of richness. As I said yesterday, same thing. The traditional offering from analysis services is the number one OLAP offering in the marketplace, and it's very rich in its capabilities. You have full MDX, you have partitioning, you have all of those great capabilities that come with analysis services. With the addition of the tabular models and this release of the new model, there's a whole ton of new functionality that brings it closer to on par with the capabilities of the old model. So you have KPIs, you have perspectives, you have row-level security if you need to use that, measures, calculations, a whole bunch of new capabilities around that. So really it's about choosing which mode and works best for you and which development environment works best for you. Okay. And then, of course, scalability. So you have VertiPack, which has really amazing compression algorithms, and you can also scale to the largest size enterprise servers. Oh, and the last thing is Analysis Services has also done a whole bunch of work for their integrated mode in SharePoint, and we've gotten some really good feedback, especially around setup and configuration, that it's way, way easier. So that's also another benefit of Denali. Okay, so in terms of architecture, like I said, there's one model, and that one model has two different modes, the multidimensional mode and the tabular mode. Something about these screens. Okay. The two modes, basically, right now, they're really differentiated by the language that you use to develop the model, right? So if you're doing calculations in the multidimensional model, you're using MDX. If you're doing calculations in the tabular model, you're doing DAX. So they're different languages, and underneath the covers, there are different ways to access data. If you're using multidimensional, you're using ROLAP or MOLAP, and if you're using tabular, you're accessing the data via using the VertiPack engine or with direct query. Okay, so that's kind of how it splits. The metadata itself is the top layer. That's the model. The business logic is the calculations that you put into it, and then the data access is how you're actually accessing the data itself. The data sources are pretty much the same, and the way that you can access them, again, you can use the client tools to access both of these. The only thing that's not available right now, obviously, is using Crescent against a multi-dimensional model. That's something that the analysis services team has committed to doing, and we're working on it. We're just not exactly sure when we're going to be able to ship it. So you will be able to use Crescent against a traditional analysis services data source. It's just a matter of time. This is another quick summary of the capabilities for the two types of models, right? For those of you who are familiar with SQL Server Relational, have done a lot of relational modeling, Tabular is going to feel very familiar to you, right? You don't have to learn the multidimensional concepts. You don't need to learn MDX. You can use something that's very much more like SQL, much more like Excel, much more table-oriented. Multidimensional requires a higher learning curve, but if you're doing things like parent-child, many-to-many, you're doing financial calculations, time sliding, all of those concepts are really great with analysis services. With MDX, you want to use you want to continue using the multidimensional model. Okay. Another recap of the two different types of languages. DAX is very much like Excel formulas. They're meant for end-user use, so they look very much like Excel formulas, and they're easy to use, easy to get started. There are a new set of calculations that are available that are a little bit harder to use, but also are very powerful within DAX, and we have some new capabilities there. MDX, higher learning curve up front. It's a little bit harder to get up to speed, but you get a whole bunch of capabilities that come with that for current member, if you want to do overriding semantics, things like that, scoping, things like that. So those are the two types of languages, and depending on what you're familiar with, what you're comfortable with, you can use either one of those to model with. And then the summary of the different kinds of access and storage capability. Okay, so VertiPack is the in-memory column store We get about 10 times compression, like it says. It's all in memory, which means there's a ton of scanning going on, but it's really fast because it's all in memory, right? Direct query is that pass-through mode, allows you to not have to keep a cache. It's not in memory, but it allows you to go ahead and directly access, get up and running really fast on a relational data source. It does not support MDX queries right now. It only supports DAX queries. MOLAP, multidimensional, the typical compression is about 3 times. Some disk scanning, you know, some paging, that kind of thing. But that's the traditional multidimensional caching that we did with analysis services previously. And roll-up is the pass-through mode that is related to that. And you're probably all very familiar with that, so I'm going to move on. Okay, so really quickly, I'm going to show you just a teaser about PowerPivot in case those of you who have not seen it, and then we'll move on to a different Crescent demo. So that data source that I was just using for the Crescent report, that's movies data, and that comes from this model that I have, and I have it in PowerPivot also. When I was connecting to it as a data source, I actually also published that as a database in analysis services, so I didn't connect directly to the Excel workbook to do the reporting, but it's basically the same data. And so what I have... Oh, you can't see the bottom. Oh, you can't see the bottom. I just can't see the bottom. There. So I have basically a set of movie information. The movies themselves came from Netflix. This is the user's way to munge data, right? I can grab data. I can copy and paste it directly from Excel. I can grab it from a database. I can get it from a report directly. Reports output Atom feeds, so you can connect to an Atom feed from a report. You can grab it from Azure and use all of those capabilities. You get RSS or some other data source. So as an end user, it's really easy for me to go ahead and grab data here and just munge it together and manipulate it. So here I have some titles. And you can see about 127,000 titles that I grabbed from the Netflix service. And for the actual data itself, purchases, this is what came from the Xbox service. And you can see here there's 101,400,011,707,000,000 rows. Okay, that's all sitting inside of Excel. That's part of the power of PowerPivot, is the ability to have a ton of data all compressed in memory inside of Excel. And I would never want to do this in reality, but I can scroll through all 100 million rows and show you the numbers increasing, and you can get down to the bottom. And great, there's my 100 million rows, right? More interestingly, of course, is that I can come in here and I can, for example, sort my 100 million rows. I can sort smallest to largest, or I can sort largest to smallest. And it's the longest thing it's doing is bringing up the list in the dialog, right? Everything else is really darn fast, okay? That's 100 million rows sorted on the fly. I can come in here and say I want to filter and see just the Canadian currency purchases. And, right, filtering on 100 million rows, also really easy. So as an end user, I can really come in, grab data from anywhere, not be constrained by the size, kind of limit to what I want to use, put that in the model, and then point Crescent at it and do some visualization, okay? So what's in CDB3, which wasn't there before, is both the ability, well, this was there before. What you want to do for Crescent is you want to make sure there are relationships between all of your data, right? If there's not a relationship, it's not very interesting for us to report off of. We can't do any of that interactivity and stuff like that, okay? So here are my relationships, really, you know, easy, normal way to create them. I just define them. If I don't want to look at the data in this form, there's a new diagram view that comes with the, and those of you who have used relational will be very familiar with diagram views. So you get easy view of your data. You can create relationships and manage them here. You can create calculations, all that kind of thing, okay? And there's this advanced tab, which is actually going to change after CDB3. But this is where some of the properties for that make Crescent really great are set. So if you are creating a model and you want to have some of that really nice out-of-the-box capabilities for Crescent, you want to do this. And you want to go here, and it's kind of hidden. So if you go to the file menu, there's a switch to normal mode, because I have advanced mode on right now. But if you originally turned it on, you see a switch to advanced mode, and that'll bring that up. But some of the interesting things to do, like I showed you, when I clicked on movies, I saw the most interesting fields about movies that were defined in the model. That's coming in here, going to one of the tables, and saying that I want to set some table details on there. Select a column, make sure that the table details is selected. That'll tell us that when the user clicks on that table to show that field. Okay. And image URL, very important. If you want to use external images, that's actually how I have this one set up, is I have a little web directory in SharePoint where I have the images. You can store it directly in a SharePoint document library and give us all the URLs to there, but you got to tell us that that field is an image URL. So we can go, whenever the user puts that field on the page, we go and fetch the image. We don't show them the image URL. Okay, so that's this one. A representative image is gives you the nice things, like when I created the little card, the image that showed up in the poster in the corner, that's the representative image. So if you have multiple images, one of them can represent whatever the entity is, movies in this case, right? So you want to tell us those kinds of things so that we can have a really great experience in Crescent. Okay? So that's where some of the properties are. And then once you have that model, you can use Excel and point to it with normal Excel capabilities. These are just pivot tables and pivot charts with slicers in Excel, right? So you have the ability to access it directly in Excel if that's what your users want to do. If they want a different, just a web-based tool that they can use to play and interact with their data, then they can go and use Crescent. It's really up to the end user what environment they're familiar with and how sophisticated they are. The feedback that we've gotten is Crescent really great. We've done some usability testing. It doesn't take people long to figure it out. It takes them a little longer to figure out pivot table and pivot chart. And lots of people continue not to be intimidated by pivot table and pivot chart, though they're quite powerful. So that's kind of how you decide which client tools are best for your users, their sophistication, their comfort level with the tools. All right, so let's flip over to the other machine real quick. So I struggled a lot to figure out what data set to show you guys. That might be fun. And I settled on a public school data set from the U.S. And I went around and asked a whole bunch of people, please explain the public school system to me in New Zealand so I can map my data to something that you guys could understand. And I asked like half a dozen people. Not a single one had kids. I was very unsuccessful. Somebody had to actually look it up on the web and show me the table of schools. So apparently there's primary school here, which is equivalent to our elementary school system in the U.S. You have an intermediate school system, which is somewhere between like 7th and 6th and 9th grade, something like that, which is the same as our junior high school. And then your secondary school is the equivalent to our high school. So that's kind of how the mappings will work. But apologize that I wasn't that successful in figuring it out. So let me go ahead and delete this. The data that I have is actually kind of fun, only because it has nothing to do with things that are really, really important, like grades. It's about behavior problems. Okay, this is real data from the U.S. It's from a public school system, and it's really about how often students are absent and how often they get in trouble, okay? So let's take a look. And this is really, the exact same thing I would do if I were just going to go and, this is actually how I learned the data set, because someone just dropped us this data set and said, hey, there might be some interesting things here. So let's take a look at the schools real quick. And with real data, you'll notice that right away there are some interesting gaps. Yeah, it's going. It's actually a really pretty big data set, and this machine, for some reason, is wants to be really slow lately. So anyway, you'll see that you get nulls, right? Because real data has nulls. You get missing things, missing images and stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the filter pane. And what the filter pane does is allows you to filter the data on the page. And I'm going to go ahead and grab school. And I'm going to grab the school name and stick it in the filter pane. So we had slicers in CDB2. And with CDB3, we also have the... Did I not do that? We also have the ability to drop in school name. It doesn't want to go in. There's a little zooming. Let's try this. Zoom back to 100. Oh, to the right. Let's start this over. Make sure it's kind of refreshed. Okay. All right, there's my site. Let's zoom. We'll zoom to like... The resolutions on these projectors are just really not that fun. All right, so let's launch it again and let it load the model. So the school data that we have basically has schools. It has information about the behaviors themselves and the absences for those schools, and it's broken down by grade level. So we'll go ahead and let it do that. Hopefully everything will wake up. Now we can come over and look at something else. There we go. Okay. So there's my schools. And let's make sure this works. Something about this projection that's just really not making it... making the mouse not happy. All right, so let's see if we can get school name in here real quick. There we go. All right, so let's plop school on here, too. And it's going to be too big. There we go. Okay, so I can come in here and say I want all but not blank, right? So that'll get rid of the blank school. And everything else will still come back. And let's give it a sec. Okay, so that got rid of the blank school, just taking a minute. You can, of course, come in here and you can grab a whole number of different filters that you can add here. So if I wanted to come in and say, well, I only want to look at a certain type of school, so I can say I want, I think it's the ELA school type. That's going to... So here are my different classifications of school. So if I wanted to just do high school, I could do that. And that will limit the list to high school. So you can add in a whole bunch of different constraints and merge them together there. If you have things that are not lists, there's an advanced mode to the card. So if you turn it over, you can create conditions, right? So if you don't want to, if checkboxes aren't enough or you need to do a clause that's a little bit more sophisticated, you can do that here, contains, not contains. And that's all based on data type. So if I have a number... let's see if I can grab district area code. This might be text. Let's see. Yeah, that's still text. If you have a number, you'll actually see a slider for that. So you can combine multiple different types of clauses right there and see them all. It's the same as putting a slicer on the page, but it saves some space because, you know, we know room is a premium here. So let's go ahead and let's get rid of this one and let's get rid of this and look at the actual behaviors, not just the schools. So if I have, for example, the interesting things are grade level. So if I come here and grab the grade name and grab the school enrollment... The absence behavior, and the count of absences. And I turn that into a line chart. That's going to show me all the different grades. And there are some odd ones in here. The public school system has some very specific, like, charter-type schools that they track also. Then I can come in here and I can, for example, copy and paste this table. So let's Control-C and Control-V that one. And then I'm going to go ahead and replace that measure with the count of student behaviors. And so I've got count of absences, and you can see that the count of absences kind of peaks around, so somewhere between 4 and 13, there's that slope. And the count of bad behaviors is actually a very different looking slope, right? It peaks right at the ninth grade. So one of the interesting things I can do is I can come in and actually look at these two things by gender. So let's look at students and the gender of the students. So if I come in here and grab gender for that one, it'll go ahead and break it down. And all of that is being controlled here, right? So I've got the count of absences, the grade name, the gender. You can drag and drop directly to here and control exactly where the fields get placed. But just based on the clicks that I have and the order of the clicks, it'll figure out the default place to put it. You can see that for absences, males and females really don't differ in absences, right? They have the same kind of absence behavior. So let's look at their the actual bad behaviors and see if there's a difference there. You can guess which gender has the worst behavior. That's not a hard guess. This is taking a little while. I'm not sure why it's doing that. All right. So males, yes, the red males have a lot worse bad behavior than females. But interestingly, the line is the curve is the same, right? Boys and girls get in trouble at about the same time. Now, let's go ahead and copy this and put it down below. And actually, there's a flag in here that tells us whether the behavior was not just bad behavior, but whether it was a violent behavior. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. So let's grab student behavior. And we'll do the count of violence instead of the count of behaviors. Any guesses? Violent behaviors? So this was actually really interesting. The first time I looked at this chart, I was like, no way, that's really true. Obviously, boys get in a lot more trouble with violent behavior than girls, but the peak is really different. Look at that. Girls get in trouble earlier than boys do. Boys wait a little while. I guess girls do mature faster than boys, after all. So there's also location information, so we can tell where these bad behaviors occurred. So let's look at those. And there's my athletic field auditorium and so forth, right? Let's come down and look at the count of behaviors. And you can see, I've shown this to a couple of different public school systems, and the first time they saw this data, they were like, oh yeah, that makes a whole ton of sense, and I'll tell you why. Look at the bar chart. You see that almost everything bad happens in the classroom and in this place called unknown, right? You can really tell this is real data because people are lazy about entering the right pieces of information. So half of the behaviors happen in this place called unknown. So that's fun. Okay, so that gives you a little overview of what the data looks like here. There's some other really nifty views that I can do. So one of the things I showed you was band before, right? Bands and tiles, the new name for bands, can be used not just as a little slide view, but really as a really great kind of a dashboard view, right? So if I wanted to navigate each individual school and compare the behavior of the schools, I can create a tile that has each of the different schools, and I can navigate them to compare the behavior, okay? And you can really easily see the schools that the trends are very different in the different schools, right? Some of them have clearly a lot of absences and a lot of behaviors, and some of them don't, right? So one of the important things about tiles that we worked really hard to do is to make sure that you can visually compare. Now, right now, as I'm scrolling through, you'll notice that this particular dimension of the chart, it's never changing, right? In some of these cases, there is no data, but the values still stay the same. In these charts with the numbers, if you look at the numbers, this is 200,000 K absences. That's a big school, right? If I come here, there's only like 400 absences in this school total, right? So it's a very different, smaller school. If I want to visually compare those, what I want to do is come in here and do something like lock the axes. So if I come here and say I want axes, I want them to be the same for all tiles. I want to lock the y-axis or the x-axis or both axes, right? So right now I want to lock the y-axis. And what that's going to do is it's going to bump down the counts for all of the schools that have very low behavior. And that allows me to flip through and actually visually compare them much more easily than having to extrapolate the scales of them, right? So now this one got bumped down pretty far. And you see the axes, they don't change. It doesn't change as I'm scrolling through. And I really can visually compare them. Sometimes you want to do that. Sometimes you don't, right? You want the user to have control of whether or not the axes are synchronized across different tiles. So that's another really great view, way to use tiles. And then another great view that we have, and I'll just show you this one real quick, is what we call a small multiple. So let's go ahead and zoom out a little bit here too. What I have here is just a chart, and the chart is the count of behaviors by grade and gender, right? And it's basically for high school. I just limited it to high school. If I want to compare visually each high school, I can come in here and I can create what we call a vertical multiple with it. I can grab the school name and plop it on vertical multiples. And what that's going to do is going to create a little mini chart for each school and put them on the page at the same time, okay? And that's going to make it really easy for me to look across different schools and see how different they are in terms of their behavior. So here are each of the different schools, and I can compare them easily. I can see that Beach, you know, has a ton of behaviors kind of there, and then it tapers off, and the trend is different, right? So I can come and see the rest of them. And the curves are very different for the different schools. Now, one of the really nice things about multiples is the user really... it's very easy for them to decide how many instances of the multiple they want to see at once. So I'll have to come in and grab this grid layout and say I want 2x2, right? Or I want 4x4 or 6x6 or however many I want, right? So I don't actually have a ton of high schools, but I can decide how many instances I see. That's really easy to control. All the axes are synchronized, and you can just visually scroll, look through and see the differences in the schools very simply, right? So that's another really great visualization that we have. So you can also, what it's doing here is it's wrapping the number of schools, right? I can also put schools, I can have two different dimensions of multiples. So here I've got vertical multiples. I can come in and grab, for example, a different dimension and grab the, let's say the student gender or something. Gender is already on here. I'll grab the ethnicity ID. I won't show you the actual ethnicities because they're a little sensitive, but I'll show you the IDs. And what that's going to do is on the left-hand side on the verticals, it's going to show me each individual school. And across the top, it's going to show me the breakdown by ethnicity, and I'll be able to see the behaviors by ethnicity, okay? So it'll go ahead and do that. But it's just a really easy way to do a lot of comparison of a lot of data all at once. So let's do that. It's really not usually this slow. There it goes. All right, so there's the schools, and there are the ethnicity IDs, and I can come down and take a look at some of the other ones. And you can see that the trends are very different for both the schools and the different types of ethnicity, okay? So that's another good way to use that visualization. All right, so I think we're pretty much out of time, so let's go through the rest of the slides real quick. There were questions yesterday about the positioning of Crescent and how it interact with the rest of the BI tools that we have, especially from reporting services. So Report Designer and Report Builder are not going away. They're very important tools to us, for developers and for IT pros and power users. So when we first created Report Builder, we did Report Builder 1 in 2005. It was fairly simplistic, and people said, that's cool, we have ad hoc reporting, but it's not powerful enough. You need to make it more powerful. So we did that, and we went a little too far. So what we found is Report Builder is resonating really well with IT pros and with power users who really get report building. And they're a lot closer to our developers who are in bids than they are to true end users, right? So when we created Crescent, we made sure that Crescent is really, like I said, it's a very different beast than Report Builder and Report Designer. It's really about the real end user interacting and exploring data. But that doesn't mean that bids and Report Designer aren't important. There are still lots of operational type reports that you need to be able to do, or embedded type reports, and you want to have fine-grained control over all the little widgets, all the little visualizations on the page, be able to add code, be able to write expressions. That's the power that comes Report Builder with Report Builder and with bids, with Report Designer. So those continue to be supported, and we will be moving those forward. And in fact, we've made investments in those places. The other question we get a lot is Crescent going to replace everything else in the Microsoft BI stack? And the answer to that is also no, right? We've got a lot of great offerings across the Microsoft stack. There's Excel, there's PPS, there are all those other tools in SharePoint, dashboard capabilities. All of that still exists. Crescent is really about ad hoc reporting, about data visualization, and it's a complement to the other existing Microsoft BI capabilities. So it doesn't replace Report Builder or bids. It's not meant for DevIT Pro reports that you build in bids. Excel is our high-end analysis tool. It's not Crescent, right? We're not going to invest a lot of time doing a lot of calculations, supporting a lot of calculation building directly in Crescent. That's what Power Pivot is for. That's what DAX is for. That's what Excel is for, okay? You've got all those great capabilities. Use them there. Get the data ready. Your users get it. Then you point Crescent at it, and you can do all the interactivity on top of that, okay? It's not a cell-by-cell calculation tool. There's lots of capabilities with PPS that come with that. It doesn't do forecasting or write-back. Again, there's stuff that other tools that we have for that. And today it doesn't replace PPS scorecards or ProClarity. If you have complex KPIs that you want to create, you want to merge them together into a scorecard, that's the place for PPS, okay? So with that, I will take some questions. There's actually a list of sessions that are related in the PowerPoint deck that's uploaded, so you can find them. But there's a Power Pivot session tomorrow that's being run by Anna, and that'll dive more into the capabilities of Power Pivot. I have the reporting services, what's new in Denali session, that'll give an overview of all the other stuff that we're doing, including Crescent. And I believe there are also a couple more, Rob has a couple more SQL Server-based sessions. I'll take questions. Yeah. I'm sorry? What version of SharePoint? Okay, so licensing is not totally locked yet, so I can't say exactly at the moment. I'm guessing it is not going to support Foundation, and that it will require Enterprise. Okay, yeah. Formatting, yes. There's not a lot of formatting. There's actually no formatting. That's a good catch. Yes, we want to add formatting. We probably won't get to it in this release, and we'll add data region level formatting so you can change color schemes on the fly. We don't want users spending a lot of time saying that I really need this one to be blue and, you know, have fine-grained control of each individual bar. But certainly things like data region themes and styling we want to be able to do. We're just probably not going to get there in the first release. Okay. Yeah. We're out of time. So come on up, ask me questions. I'll be around outside too. Thanks.